This is Scott Russell Sanders reading a story called Stones in response to a photograph by Peter Forbes. Are stones alive? When Ursula began her research among the Yanu, she scoffed at the notion. Of course, stones aren't alive, she would have said. They're raw matter. Things, not beings. But after 3 summers of studying these desert people who listened to their ancestors whisper from cracks and boulders and crevices and the red rock canyons, she feels less certain about the distinction between living and non-living. Before her initial visit to the Yanu, she learned what she could of their language from her thesis advisor, who was the first anthropologist to contact this isolated tribe. He had kept their location secret to protect them as long as possible from collectors, journalists, and tourists. Thanks to his precautions, the Yanu had remained undisturbed in their remote cliff dwellings, growing crops of corn, beans, and squash, hunting jackrabbits and mule deer, clinging to their primitive beliefs. Ursula's task is to document their culture before it collapses under the onslaught of the modern world. Other tribes that once inhabited this region built cairns to mark paths across the desolate plateau, inscribed pictures in canyon walls, and used boulders for altars. But only the Yanu, so far as Ursula has been able to discover, have brought stones into their council meetings, made places for them around the fire circle, or consulted them about vital matters. When a member of the tribe dies, according to the Yanu, his or her soul leaves the body and slips into a crack in the canyon walls or into a water-tumbled rock in an arroyo. From that refuge, the soul keeps watch on the living and reminds them of the wisdom needed for surviving in this harsh land. And not only human souls take shelter in stone, so do the spirits of corn and cactus, lizard and coyote, scorpion, porcupine, owl, snake, and every other creature of this place. Eventually, the souls migrate back into the birthing hut, the fox den, the eagle nest, the beehive, the buried seed. And so life, inextinguishable, exchanges one body for another. Ursula wishes she could believe that life is inextinguishable, for already in her mid-20s, she has lost a bewildering number of loved ones. An uncle to leukemia, a fellow student to drugs, a mentor to a car wreck, a cousin to war. This past spring, she held her grandmother's hand as the old woman exhaled a final breath. One moment, the body on the hospital bed was a person. The next moment, it was mere stuff. What was the force that once animated the flesh, Ursula wonders? And where did it go after the last breath? It would be comforting to think that some essence of each loved one departed from the body and now lingers in a niche nearby. But Ursula's scientific training has convinced her that there is no such essence, no spirit or soul. For 3 summers, this training has also kept her from voicing her skepticism or in any way challenging Yanu beliefs. Finally, however, on the evening before she must pack up and return to campus, Ursula cannot resist asking one of the elders, a white-haired matriarch named Muna, if stone truly can harbor life. The old woman smiles, takes Ursula's hand, and leads her into a shadowed canyon. "Sit, daughter," Muna says, pointing to a spot that offers a view along the red walls, which are darkening with dusk. Ursula lowers herself onto the ledge, rests hands in her lap, and breathes deeply to slow her pulse. "Now listen," the old woman says before walking away. Ursula closes her eyes and listens. Wind, rustle of sand, chitter of birds. Then beneath those sounds she hears a murmur, like footsteps, a distant drum, or a heartbeat. Yes, yes, a heartbeat. Whether her own or the stones, she cannot tell.